Welcome to BioTime, a podcast to help you pass high school biology and understand the science of life. My name is Chris, and I'm your host today. Hey guys, today we are going to be discussing the properties of water and atomic structure. Initially, I was only planning on speaking about the properties of water, but I eventually realized that there's no way of understanding the properties of water without first understanding atomic structure. So we are going to be talking about both of them today. We're going to begin by discussing atomic structure, where we will review protons, neutrons, electrons, the overall structure of the atom, along with different types of bonding, polar, nonpolar, covalent bonds, ionic bonds. So really today we're going to be covering a good chunk of biochemistry related parts of AP Bio. It's not the largest and most important part of the exam, but it is a part of Unit 1, so it is important to cover. And then we're finally going on to cover the properties of water, which is a pretty significant part of the AP Bio curriculum. So let's get right into it. So first off, with atomic structure, atoms are the building blocks of everything we see around us. They consist of three different subatomic particles: protons, neutrons, and electrons. Protons are positively charged, electrons are negatively charged, and neutrons have no charge, so neutral. I find this pretty easy to remember, as protons start with a P, so they're positive, and neutrons sound like they're neutral, so no charge. And as for electrons, I don't exactly have a way of remembering it, but it's pretty simple to remember as there are only three of them. So now that we understand charges, let's gain a sense of the overall structure of the atom. An atom is basically one large nucleus that has super tiny electrons orbiting around it at really, really high speeds. The nucleus of an atom consists of protons and neutrons. To help you gain a better sense of the size of an atom in relation with its protons, neutrons, and electrons, if a football field was to represent the entire atom, the nucleus would be the size of a grape in the center of the field, and the electrons would zoom around the outside of the stadium at really high speeds. An important clarification to make is that electrons move around in random motion. They basically orbit around the nucleus at very high speeds, but the path they travel is completely random. And what keeps these high-speed electrons from just like flying away from the nucleus is that we have positively charged protons in the nucleus, and the negatively charged electrons are attracted to them. But the balance between the positive charge and the negative charge is just enough to keep the electrons from flying away, but it's not strong enough that the electrons get pulled to the nucleus. Now that we have an overall understanding of the general structure of an atom, it's important to discuss the different states that an atom can be in, as this is relevant to many biological processes. Atoms can either be in ground state or excited state. Ground state is when an atom is in the lowest possible energy level. Atoms in this state are relatively stable, but an excited state, on the other hand, is when the electrons are in higher energy levels than the ground state level. This excited state is relatively unstable, as there's so much energy in the atom. A good example of the usage of ground state and excited state and their application in the real world is in photosynthesis. So photosynthesis requires the movement of electrons in order to assist in the generation of ATP. But in order for electrons to take part in photosynthesis, they need to be charged to higher energy levels by sunlight. So that's where we're seeing like that difference between ground state and excited state coming in. Another type of atom that is important to note are isotopes. So isotopes are atoms that vary only in the number of neutrons. So what actually defines an element is the number of protons. And to help paint a better picture of what we're discussing, let's take carbon as an example. So carbon has 6 protons, so any atom with 6 protons is carbon, no matter what. But the moment that carbon can have different variations or different forms, which we're going to call isotopes, is when the number of neutrons changes. So it's still carbon, but it's just referred to as an isotope of carbon. And we see this when we talk about half-life, as often when we talk about half-life, we talk about carbon-12 or carbon-14, And the reason why we all call these carbons with just different numbers attached at the end is because they're isotopes of carbon, which have different numbers of neutrons. And with our collective review of atoms, isotopes, and their structures, we can now move on to discussing two different types of bonding. There's covalent and there's ionic. Covalent bonding is when two atoms share electrons between them, and ionic is when an atom gives its electron to another atom. So it's a completely, you're completely giving it away. And I remember the difference between covalent and ionic, as a covalent sounds like co, so it seems like they're sharing something. And as for ionic, I don't exactly have a way of remembering it, but there's only two types, so it's not too bad. And for AP Bio, as we can see, these chemistry concepts, it's not too important to go into great depth on them, but it's just important to understand on the surface what they are, as this is not AP Chem. So just remember, covalent, sharing of electrons, and then ionic is a complete giving of electrons. But what is very important for AP Bio, though, to understand is polar and nonpolar. Understanding the difference between polar and nonpolar is vital, as it determines what can pass through a lipid bilayer. Nonpolar is when two atoms exert an equal amount of force upon each other. The relevance to lipid bilayers is that we know that nonpolar substances pass through the lipid bilayer quite easily, while something that is polar, which means that they're exerting unequal amounts of force on each other, are going to need some extra help to pass through the lipid bilayer, as they won't just be able to diffuse through, right? So maybe if we had a polar molecule trying to pass through a lipid bilayer, it might need help through maybe a ligand-gated ion channel that's going to allow a polar molecule to pass through. And now that we have spent all this time understanding atoms and all the important things about them, we can finally talk about the properties of water. And just right before we dive into it, let's first discuss two important characteristics of water. The first is that water is a polar molecule. And just as we talked about earlier, a polar molecule is when atoms pull on each other with an unequal force. And water is classified as polar as the oxygen atom exerts a greater pull than the other two hydrogen atoms. The other important characteristic I want to note is that water uses hydrogen bonding. This is very important, as hydrogen bonding is critical to life on Earth and is a large reason why life even exists. So for AP Bio, it's important to know five properties. First, water has a high specific heat. Specific heat is defined as the amount of energy required to raise something by 1 degree Celsius. This property is important, as this is why our climate is able to be regulated. If you were to look at the weather of areas by the ocean, we can see that the climate is relatively stable, whereas maybe a city far from a large body of water will have greatly fluctuating climates. It's because a large body of water in an area is going to want to help maintain the temperature, as with a high specific heat, the temperature of that body of water doesn't want to change. All right, and this is a very important topic and is actually quite often tested on the AP exam. The second property is high heat of vaporization. This just means that it takes a lot of heat in order to vaporize water. And this is really important for, as an example, humans, because we need to sweat to get rid of heat. And if water didn't have a high heat of vaporization, sweating would be ineffective and we wouldn't really have a good way to cool ourselves off. And it's not just humans that sweat. Horses sweat, monkeys, apes, and surprisingly even hippos sweat. The third property is that water is the universal solvent. Two characteristics we discussed earlier are that water is polar and it contains hydrogen bonds. And these two characteristics combined allow water to dissolve all polar and ionic substances, which includes a lot of compounds. Water is capable of dissolving more substances than any other liquid. An application of this property in the human bodies is with the kidneys. Our kidneys serve to get rid of all of the junk in our body, and our kidneys need something to dissolve all of these toxic particles and waste that we don't want and be able to actually flush them out. And that is where water's ability to dissolve so many compounds comes in handy. And after dissolving them, we're able to pee out any waste our body doesn't want. But while water is a universal solvent and it's able to break down so many compounds, it is important to know that hydrophobic substances do exist. And hydrophobic substances are basically just things that don't want to mix with water. And, you know, a very common example is oil mixing with water. The fourth property that I want to talk about is that water has a strong cohesion tension. This is just a way of saying that water molecules like to stick together. This can be seen throughout many plants, as this property is what allows plants to transport water upward against gravity. And an example we can look at is through trees. In order for water collected by the roots of a tree to travel through the trunk and all the way up to the leaves at the top of a tree, water's tendency to stick together helps to slowly pull water up the tree as when one droplet of water evaporates out through a leaf, water's cohesion, tension, and tendency to want to stick together is going to help pull up another droplet to fill the place of the droplet of water that was just released through the leaf. And a strong cohesion tension is also related to capillary action. Capillary action is quite similar to what we just talked about. It's water's tendency to want to rise up against gravity. And this helps for water to enter a plant's roots. Outside of helping plants survive, surface tension is also related to cohesion tension. And surface tension is what helps many bugs be able to travel across water. So if you ever see like a water starter running across the water, it's because of surface tension that they're not sinking. And something really interesting that I just wanted to throw in is that geckos can actually run on water because of surface tension. And when they do, they are just as fast as when they are on land. So on to our final property. And it is that ice is less dense than water. And this occurs as when temperatures drop to a freezing point, the molecules of water are unable to maintain a uniform structure. So the molecules of H2O end up being pushed further apart as they're not able to really form like a tight and neat structure. So there's a lot of like room in between the molecules when in a frozen state. And this property is what allows for ice to flow on top of water, as something that is more dense is going to sink and something that is less dense is going to rise above. So during cold winters, lakes are able to have a sheet of ice on top while the water underneath it is still free flowing. And due to this property, ecosystems, marine and freshwater biomes can still thrive even in the wintertime. And as the ice thaws with the arrival of spring, the melting of ice allows for the water from the melting ice to go to the bottom of the body of water and help to cycle nutrients. And this is really important as it cycles around oxygen and different other like minerals that help for all the animals and in the surrounding area to survive. And this is referred to as spring overturn. So to give a quick recap, today we have covered atomic structure. An atom is made up of a nucleus, and with many electrons flying around it at really high speeds. The nucleus is made up of protons and neutrons. But remember that there can be multiple versions of an element, which we can see through isotopes, as isotopes always have the same number of protons, but can have a different number of neutrons. Atoms can either be in ground state, where they are relatively stable, or they can be in an energized and unstable state called an excited state. As for bonding, remember that polar is an unequal exertion of force between two atoms, and nonpolar is an equal exertion of force between two atoms. So make sure you don't forget this, as this topic is a frequent AP Bio test question, as they're related to whether or not something is going to pass through a lipid bilayer. So the second thing that we covered today was the properties of water. So first, is high specific heat. The second property is high heat of vaporization. The third property is that water is a universal solvent. And the fourth is that water exhibits strong cohesion tension. And the fifth and final property is that ice is less dense than water. So that wraps it up for this podcast on atomic structure and properties of water. Thanks for listening.